So today is a very important lecture. We're going to write down the standard model Lagrangian. So before we write down the standard model Lagrangian, I need to tell you a couple of things. First, in order to write down a Lagrangian, you need to know what are the degrees of freedom. So I'm going to write down all of the degrees of freedom. And the standard model, of course, is based on gauge symmetry. So I need to write down what are all of the how do all of these fields, how do all of these degrees of freedom transform under the gauge symmetry? So first of all, what is the gauge symmetry? Well, I want to tell you what the gauge group is. So it's based on the following group. There's a SU3. This will have to do with a strong interaction, which has to do with color. And so typically, you denote this as SU3 with a subscript C. Across SU2, and this is typically denoted with a subscript left, or L, I should say, for left. And then also across U1 with a subscript Y. The Y, I don't know why it's called Y, but it stands for hypercharge. So the SU3 part is QCD, and the C stands for color. And the SU2 cross U1 parts is the electroweak gauge group. So electromagnetism and the weak force are going to live inside of this particular gauge symmetry. And then the L stands for left, and the Y stands for hypercharge. I guess it doesn't really stand for it, but that's what it means. All right, so that's the gauge symmetry. And OK, it's not a single group. It's it's a product of three simple groups. Next, I need to tell you what are the degrees of freedom. And so I'm just going to write down all of the fields and tell you what their quantum numbers are. And let me explain a little bit about the notation. I'm going to describe the quantum numbers as a series of three different indices. Those indices are going to tell us how this particular field transforms under the three different gauge groups. And so the ordering is, first I'll tell you what is the quantum number under color, and then I'll tell you what's the quantum number under SE2 left, and then I'll tell you what's the quantum number under hypercharge. And the notation's a little bit confusing if you haven't seen it before. So for an abelian group, mainly just U and Y, I'm just going to be writing down the quantum number, which is just the charge in units of the gauge charge. So what I'm going to be writing is basically the analog of Q that I had before. It's just going to be a particular number. And that will tell me what is the electric charge, or the electric hypercharge, so to speak. For a non-abelian group, the notation is different. I'm going to be writing down a number which corresponds to the dimension of the representation. So I only need to worry about the simplest cases. So if I write down n, this is a fundamental of SUn. Or if I write down 1, that's a singlet under SUn, meaning that it doesn't transform under that particular symmetry. OK, so hopefully the notation will be clear. So let's start out with the quark fields. So to start out with, I'll have a left-handed quark field. And this will be a doublet. I should say it's a triplet under color. So I'll write a 3 here. Just means it carries color, like the usual quark. It's a doublet under the SU2 left gauge symmetry, and then its hypercharge is 1/6. It's a doublet under SU2, and so you could think of in SU2 space, it has two different components. It's just a two-component vector. And if I wrote those out explicitly, this would be U left and D left. So it does doublet under SU2. It's also a triplet under color, but I haven't written those indices in explicitly. I'll just keep them suppressed. Now there's also a right-handed quark field, which I'll write as UR. This is a triplet under color, but a singlet under SU2 left, and then its hypercharge is 2/3. Then I have D right, triplet under color, singlet under SU2, and its hypercharge is -1/3. Next, I have a left-handed lepton doublet. So I'll write that as L sub L. And it's going to be a doublet. And so its components, it'll have two components. One is the left-handed neutrino, and one is the left-handed charged lepton. It's a singlet under color, a doublet under SU2 left, and then its hypercharge is -1/2. I have a right-handed lepton field, which is singlet under color and SU2 left, and its hypercharge is -1. And then I have the Higgs field, which I'll write as capital H. This is also a doublet under SU2, and I can write its components as H plus and H0. And its quantum numbers will be, it's a singlet under color, a doublet under SU2, and it has hypercharge 1/2. Okay, so it's a little bit suggestive. I wrote plus and zero here. Those will correspond to the electric charge of these components, and we'll see how that comes about. So I forgot to add a couple different things. So first of all, it's a weird feature of the standard model that it seems to have multiple copies of itself. This is known as generations. For example, there's not just the electron, but there's the electron, the muon, and the tau. They all seem to have exactly the same properties, exactly the same quantum numbers, except for their mass. So the standard model for all of these different fermions, quarks and leptons, experimentally are known to have 3 different copies, which just differ by their mass. So I need to add in an additional label, which corresponds to generation. So I'll just write an extra label I here. All of the quantum numbers are the same for every generation. Okay. Next, I want to mention that in the standard model, there's also no right-handed neutrino. If I did put it in, I would have to add it in as follows. So I'm just going to write it in as a parenthetical. It would be a singlet under color, a singlet under SU2 left, and then it would have 0 hypercharge. So if I did want to put it in, it's a little bit peculiar because it's actually a singlet under all of the standard model gauge symmetries, meaning it doesn't have any gauge quantum numbers at all. It doesn't interact with any of the gauge bosons in the standard model. And that's one of the reasons why it's a little bit, why there's this ambiguity of how to put in neutrino mass into the standard model. Is the fact that the right-handed fields doesn't transform under any of the gauge symmetries, unlike all of the other fields that we're putting in now. So we're going to omit it for the time being. Okay. So here I have all of the fermions, and then I have the scalars, and then we also have the gauge bosons. So we have SU3 color. The gauge bosons are gluons. So we have a gluon field, which I'll call little g, and then it carries a gauge index A and a Lorentz index mu. A runs over all the generators for SU3, and so it would go from 1 to 8. SU2 left has a gauge field, which I'll call WA mu. A runs over all of the three generators in SU2, essentially the Pauli matrices. And so this just goes from 1 to 3. And then I have my gauge field for hypercharge, which I'll call B mu. And there's just one gauge boson, because it's a U1. It's just this. The hypercharged gauge boson, B mu, is not the photon. Okay, we'll see. We're going to see how where the photon comes from. So these are the different fields. I also need to write down the gauge couplings. And so I'll call the gauge couplings G sub S for the strong interaction, just G for the weak for the SU2, and G prime for hypercharge. Let me just mention one thing. It should be clear that the theory is chiral. The color parts of the gauge symmetry is not chiral, meaning that the left and right-handed components carry the same quantum numbers under color. But the left and right-handed components transform differently under SU2 cross U1. They have different SU2 quantum numbers. In effect, only the left-handed fermions transform under the SU2 part of the Lagrangian. And also, the U1 part is also chiral, because the left and right-handed parts all have different hypercharges as well. So the electroweak part of the gauge interactions is certainly chiral. You might also be wondering, why did I choose these particular quantum numbers? Is there some deep principle that predicts what these quantum numbers are? Well, the answer is, from the point of view of writing down the standard model, the answer is no. There's no deep principle that we know of. And I'm just writing down these quantum numbers because that's what you need in order to phenomenologically reproduce the fields that we observe. That's not to say that people don't try to come up with a unifying principle to explain these quantum numbers. And probably in the last lecture, when we go beyond the standard model, we'll describe some attempts along those lines. OK, so those are all of the degrees of freedom. And now we can write down the Lagrangian. So the Lagrangian of the standard model, and I'm going to just divide it up into a couple different parts. So there's going to be a gauge part of the Lagrangian. There's going to be a fermion part of the Lagrangian. There's going to be a scalar part. And there's going to be a Yukawa part. So we'll go through all of these different terms. The gauge part of the Lagrangian just includes the following: 1 half trace of g mu nu, minus 1 half the trace of w mu nu, and then minus 1 quarter b mu nu, b mu nu. So all of these different objects here are just the corresponding field strength tensors for all of the gauge fields. OK. Next, we have the fermions. So I have lots of different fermions in the theory, so I'll have a sum over all of the fermions. And this part of the Lagrangian will just include psi bar I d slash psi. And there's no mass term I could write down, of course, because the theory is chiral. Next, I have the scalar part of the Lagrangian. So this is the covariant derivative of the Higgs fields, the Higgs scalar fields, and then minus the Higgs potential. And it's exactly what we wrote down for the non-abelian Higgs model. V of H is minus mu squared H dagger H plus lambda H dagger H squared. Last, we have the Yukawa parts, and so we're going to defer that to later. So first, we're going to consider the scalar part of the Lagrangian. And this is on one of the homework exercises, or maybe the homework exercise. So did anyone take a look at this? Yeah? OK. So I'll be a little brief in going through it. So we're going to consider scalar terms. And okay, one of the tricks is to work in unitary gauge. Where the Higgs field can be written as 1 over the square root of 2, 0, v plus h, where v is equal to the square root of mu squared over lambda. In exactly the same way as it is for the non-abelian Higgs model with pure SU2. Then I need to write down what the covariant derivative is. So this is d mu plus I over 2 g times sigma a w a mu plus I over 2 g prime b mu. And all of this is acting on H. So here's the covariant derivative. And so it has two terms because the Higgs fields here transforms under both SE2 left and hypercharge. So this is the part for SE2 left and this is the part for hypercharge. Then I just have to expand this and write it in matrix form. So this is d mu plus I over 2, and then I have this matrix. I'm just expanding the Pauli matrices here, and then this part is just proportional to the identity as far as SE2 is concerned. So I have GW3 mu plus G prime B mu, and then I have GW mu 1 plus IW mu 2, and I have W mu 1 minus I W mu 2. Then I have minus G W mu 3 plus G prime E mu. That is all of a matrix. And then it's all acting on H, which is 0 B plus H over square root of 2. So probably you went through this exercise of just taking this expression and then plugging it into here, and you see what are the masses of the gauge bosons that emerge. So we'll skip right to the answer. We have d mu h dagger d mu h gives you the following. So first, it includes, of course, the derivative of the Higgs field. So there's a kinetic term for the Higgs field. And then it generates also the masses of all of the gauge bosons. So we have G squared. Let me write it like this. There's 1/2 m, not 1/2, mw squared w plus w minus mu. And there's a factor of 1 plus h over v squared. We have plus 1/2 mz squared z mu, 1 plus h over v squared. And that's it. And so the fields here, you have to make a field redefinition in terms of the fields that I wrote down over on the right. So I'll just write down what those definitions are. Probably you know. So we have w mu plus minus was 1 over square root 2 w mu 1 minus plus I w mu 2. Z mu is equal to cosine theta w mu 3 minus sine theta w b mu. And then a mu is equal to sine theta w mu 3 plus cosine theta w b mu. And then this angle, theta w, is known as the weak mixing angle. People also call it the Weinberg angle, but it was actually written first by Glashow. So it's defined just as the tangent of this weak mixing angle is just equal to the ratio of these two electroweak gauge couplings, g prime over g. So with these definitions, I'm plugging it in here. You probably found that you can express this part of the Lagrangian in the following way. So these are the mass eigenstates, of course, because now there is no mass matrix. I just have individual fields. Z is the Z boson, and then A is the photon field. We're going to show that it corresponds to the photon field soon, but A will be the photon field. And the first thing to note that's interesting is that we get the spectrum of gauge bosons that we want. So we have a mass of the W, which is GV over 2. We have the mass of the Z, which is GV over 2 over cosine theta W. And the mass of the photon is just equal to 0. So that's great. In nature, we observe that these two degrees of freedom are massive. The photon is massless. And not only that, but these two masses are different, and the Z is heavier than the W boson. And it's heavier just because, of course, cosine has to be less than 1. These relations can be expressed in terms of a ratio. Is known as rho. Rho is mw squared divided by mz squared times cosine theta w squared. And if you just plug in these values, you can see that rho is equal to 1. But this is just true at tree level. It's modified once you include loop corrections. But this ratio rho, known as the rho parameter, is one way to test that electroweak symmetry breaking occurs in the way that I've written down. It's a very predictive sort of relation. Experimentally, you can measure the mass of the W, you can measure the mass of the Z, and you can measure this angle, the Weinberg angle, through other types of couplings, and then you just plug it into this ratio and check, is it satisfied or not? That would provide confirmation that electroweak symmetry breaking is broken through this Higgs doublet as opposed to some other representation. Okay. So when the Higgs acquires its VEV, we started out with a gauge symmetry, which is SU2 left cross U1 y, which is the electroweak gauge symmetry. And it is broken through the vacuum expectation value. And left over, we still have a residual U1 gauge symmetry because we still have one massless degree of freedom, one massless gauge boson. And so we write that it's broken down to U1 of electromagnetism. Next, we'll do the fermions. So this is a sum over all of the different fermion species, psi bar, I, e slash, psi. When I read it like this, of course, it's hiding a lot of complications. And so let me, just to be completely pedagogical, just expand everything out, just to see what we have here. So the sum over the fermions is going to be summing over all the fermion species that I wrote down. So we'll have to write down all of them. We'll have Q left bar I. I, here's the covariant derivative, D slash plus I, G over 2, sigma A, W A mu. This should be a slash. Plus I, G prime, times 1/6 b slash plus I g s over 2 times lambda a times g a slash, and that will act all on q left I. So hopefully the notation is clear. We're writing down the covariant derivative. The 1/2s here correspond to the fact that the generators are, for SE2, is Pauli matrix divided by 2. This lambda A corresponds to the Gell-Mann matrix. It's the analog of the Pauli matrix for SU3. And the generator for SU3 is just the Gell-Mann matrix divided by 2. And then the 1/6 here appears just because the hypercharge of this field is 1/6. And so that is the Q that I would plug in there. Hopefully this is clear. So then I have the right-handed fields. So I have hypercharge, G prime times 2/3 B slash plus I over 2 GS lambda A GA slash, and E right I. So again, 2/3 is the hypercharge of this particular field. I have a very similar looking interaction with the gluon fields. And there's no SU2 part because it's right-handed. And I have the right-handed downed type quark fields. The hypercharge is minus 1/3. I could probably fit the rest in here. Then I have the charged, I think I could do it. So I have the left-handed lepton fields. I d slash plus I g prime, the hypercharge is minus 1/2. And then I have the SU2 parts, I over 2 g sigma a, UA slash, and then the left-handed field again. Then I have the right-handed electron charged lepton field. Okay. The last one only has hypercharge, and so I only need the hypercharge gauge boson. So now we're going to expand or simplify these different terms. And so let's just start out with the kinetic parts of the Lagrangian. It's divided up into the left-handed fields and the right-handed fields. And maybe it's obvious that those two things pair together to give us the usual canonical kinetic term. So we'll just consider the d, the partial derivative slash terms. So, for example, for the quarks, we have the following. We have q left bar I d slash q left I plus u right bar I d slash u right I plus d right bar I d slash d right I. And now I'm just going to expand out the SU2 part of this first term. It's a doublet, u left and d left. So I have u left bar I d slash u left I plus d left bar I d slash d left I plus u right I d slash u right I d right I d slash d right I. So it's probably clear that these will pair up with this, this will pair up with this, and we'll just get the usual kinetic term. We'll have u bar d slash u plus d bar d slash d. And then the generation indices I just kind of go along for the ride. Next. We can think about the gluon terms. And the gluon interactions are the same for left and right-handed quark fields. So those will also just pair up in the usual way. So we'll get the following, minus g sub s, g mu a, then we'll have u bar I gamma mu, lambda a over 2, ui plus d bar I gamma mu lambda a over 2 di. So if I expanded all of them out, the left and right handed parts would pair up as follows. Okay. So at the end of the day, the only part that remains chiral, of course, is the electroweak part of the Lagrangian. So we'll write down the electroweak interactions. And it's useful to divide them up into two parts. We'll consider them one after the next. First, we're going to consider the, what's called the charged current interactions. So this will be only the W. Then we'll consider what are called the neutral current interactions, which will be the interactions of the Z and the photon. So the charge current interactions, I have only the Q left fields, or only the left-handed fields. So I'll have I G over 2. In SU2 space, I'll have to write down a matrix. corresponding to the gauge fields multiplying the appropriate Pauli matrices. Then I have exactly the same expression for the left-handed lepton fields. Okay. So then I can use the field redefinitions to write it in terms of W plus and W minus. And so it's just minus G over square root of 2. I'll have let me write out one other step. So I have minus G over square root of 2. The left-handed quark fields I can write as U bar left, V bar left, and then I have W plus slash W minus slash, and then I have U left, V left. And then for the leptons, it looks very similar. I have the left-handed neutrino, the electron, and then W slash plus, W slash minus, and then neutrino and charged lepton. This. And then I can write this all out as G over square root 2, U bar left I, W plus slash, D left I, minus G over square root 2, left-handed neutrino, W plus slash, E left, I, and then plus Hermitian conjugate, which would include interactions of the W minus. So those are the charge current interactions. Now we'll do the neutral current. Which will be the photon and the Z only. Okay, so we'll go through the same exercise. I have Q left. And then the part of the covariant derivative that I have is the Pauli matrix 3 contribution. We have W3 slash minus W3 slash. Then I have the hypercharged part, so G prime over 6, B slash, B slash. And let me keep going and write out all of the other fields as well. I have U bar. So I have 2/3 G prime. And then, okay, it's just B slash. There's no SU2 matrix here. Right. And I have E right I minus 1/3 G prime. B slash, B right, I. Then I have the leptons. G over 2, W3 minus W3, minus G prime over 2, B slash, B slash. And then I just have the right-handed charged lepton fields. So it's minus d prime b slash. Okay. Okay, I need to rest. My arm is really tired writing this all out. Okay. So it looks like a big mess. But we know what to do. We have the fields B and W3. We need to re-express those in terms of the photon field and the Z. So in terms of the mass eigenstate fields. So we need to plug in the following. So we would write W3. We can express in terms of the Z and the photon field, just in terms of our mixing angles, the weak mixing angle. And then similarly, B mu is just a linear combination of Z and W, or Z and the photon as well. I don't think I defined this before, but CW is just cosine theta W, and SW is sine theta W. So all you need to do is just take these expressions, plug them in here, and then just expand everything out. So we're going to do it in a general case. So we're going to consider what the neutral current interaction looks like for two fermions, psi left and psi right. Psi could be anything that I've written down over here. And so let me rewrite what I wrote over there in this general case. So the neutral current interaction would involve the psi left part. And it would look like this. There would be the SU2 left part of the interaction, which would be G times what I'll call T3 left. Times W3 slash, and plus G prime, times whatever the hypercharge is, I'll call that Y left, times B slash, and all of that acts on psi left. Then I have minus psi right, and it will just have G prime times Y right, B slash, psi right. So y left and y right are going to be the hypercharges of those particular fields. And what I call T3 left, that's just equal to plus or minus a half, depending on whether we're talking about the upper or lower components of the doublet under SU2. So for example, if I took Q left, the U left part would have T3 equals plus a half, and the D left part would have T3 left minus a half. It just corresponds to whether we're talking about plus one half or minus one half. That's all we're doing. Oh, okay, so let me write this down. So each, for example, Q left is U left D left. So U left would be plus one half, and D left would be minus one half. Okay. So now let me plug in this expression in terms of the Z and photon fields. And I get minus psi left. I have G. T3 left, cosine theta W, Z left slash, sine theta W, A slash, plus G prime, Y left, minus sine theta W, Z slash, plus cosine theta W, a slash, and then all that is psi left. And I have psi right, minus psi right bar, g prime, y right. Then I plug in for b slash, I have minus sine squared theta w z slash, plus cosine theta w a slash, acting on psi right. Okay. The other thing I need to know is that I can relate g prime and g in terms of the weak mixing angle. And so I need to use this relation that g prime is equal to g times the tangent of the weak mixing angle. So let me group these terms together. I have minus psi left. And first I'm going to write down the photon field part. So I have g times sine theta w a slash. And then I have t3 left plus y left times p left. Sorry, I can get rid of this. I'm gonna put in the left and right-handed chiralities using projection operators now. So I'll write these two terms together. So I have p left plus y right, p right. Okay, so that's the photon part of the interaction. And then I'll add to that the z part. So I have g over cosine theta w. So I'll have z slash, and then I'll have the following. T3 left, 1 minus sine squared theta w minus y left sine squared theta w, p left plus minus y right sine squared theta w, p right, and all of that is the z interaction, and then I need to end the brace, and then I have psi. Okay, so it still looks a little bit complicated, but all I've done is expand. So I've used this relation here to write g prime in terms of g and the weak mixing angle, and if you just expand all of the terms out and group them together, you get the following expression. There's one other simplification you can do. Let me take the stuff in this parentheses here. I can write this as T3 left minus T3 left plus Y left sine squared theta W. Okay, so that's pretty straightforward. So now a miracle is going to occur, and it's going to be very simple. And the reason this miracle occurs is not really a miracle. It's just because we chose the hypercharges in a smart way, and you'll see what happens. So we chose the hypercharges. Such that T3 left plus y left was equal to y right for all of the different types of fields. So for example, for the u left fields, t3 left plus y left was equal to 1 half. So that was the t3 left. And then the hypercharge was plus 1 sixth. And so that's equal to 2 thirds. Similarly, for u right, y right was just equal to 2 thirds. For d left, t3 left plus y left was equal to minus 1 half and then plus 1 sixth. That's equal to minus a third. And D writes, U right, or Y right was just equal to minus a third. Lastly, E for E left, T3 left plus Y left was equal to minus a half, since the electron part was the lower component. And then the hypercharge was minus one half. And so this is minus one. And for E right, the hypercharge was just equal to minus one. So these particular numbers should pop out. These are actually just the electric charges of each of these different fields. So I can call this number 2/3 QU, for example, plus 2/3. This one would be QD is minus 1/3. And this one here would be QE, this is minus 1. Then lastly, for the neutrino, well, we just have one component, the left-handed component, and T3 left plus Y left is just equal to plus 1 half minus 1 half is equal to 0. And so the charge of the neutrino is just equal to 0. So why are these particular combinations important? You can see that the interaction of the photon field is either T3 left plus Q left or Y right. And both of those two things are just the same number, which is just the electric charge. So we have minus, so first I'll write down the photon parts. So because these two numbers are the same, the left and right-handed projection operators will just sum to 1. And so the interaction of the photon will not be chiral at all. I'll just have minus E times Q psi, psi bar A slash psi. And here, you can see for the photon interaction, it's proportional to this overall coupling G times sine squared theta W. That is the fundamental charge E. So the electron charge is related to the weak gauge coupling times the weak mixing angle, the sine of the weak mixing angle. So that's the photon interaction. Next, we have the interaction of the Z. And so that one remains slightly complicated. You get G over cosine theta W times psi bar Z slash. And you have T3L minus Q psi sine squared theta W times psi. And there should be a projection operator here. So this part of the interaction remains chiral, and this part is no longer chiral. But in general, the interaction of the Z is a chiral interaction. So this is a nice feature. Even though we started with a gauge theory that is chiral, we were able to assign the different charges in such a way that the residual unbroken gauge symmetry, electromagnetism, turned out to be not a chiral interaction. So that's a requirement. We know electromagnetism is not a chiral theory. So that's a success of this picture. So I can write down, in terms of the different fermions, this interaction more explicitly. So for example, let's just do that for quarks. So the neutral current interaction is minus E QU times U bar I A slash UI. minus E UD D bar I A slash BI. So those are the photon interactions, and then I have the Z interactions. G over cosine theta W, U bar I, Z slash 1/2 P left, minus QU sine squared theta W, minus G over cosine theta W, D bar I, Z slash minus 1/2 P left, minus QD sine squared theta W, D I. So for example, for quarks, if I expanded this term, these terms out, this is what you get. Okay. So the next thing we're going to talk about, and we're going to save this for tomorrow, is how to write down the mass terms through the Yukawa interactions. So that'll be the next topic. So other than that, we'll quit for today. If there's any questions, you can ask some questions.
I have a question.
Yeah.
In the blackboard that's behind this one in the middle, where you wrote the kinetic terms and the polar terms.
It must be gone.
There were the kinetic terms, and then you wrote together UL plus UR. Well, you wrote together UL and UR.
Mm-hmm.
And you define this U without the subindex. How is this U defined? Is it just the sum of UL and UR, or is it?
Yeah, so forget about the generation index for now.
Yep.
So I wrote down U bar left D slash U left plus D bar left D slash D left. Mm-hmm. And then I just, I want to pair together. U right. These are the things I want to pair together.
Yep.
And so I can write this as U bar D slash P left plus D slash P right U. Mm. And now, so just to be even more clear, so this is just P left plus P right, and then U. And these two things, when you add them together, just give you one. So you just have U bar D slash U. Any other questions?